Welcome to The Locked Room. Stories from the golden age of mystery and crime fiction. I'm Mardell, and now, the final episode of The Scent of Almonds by Hulbert Futtner. Madame Story and I searched the remaining members of the company, including the dead woman's father. He could have had no reason for poisoning his daughter, so far as we knew. But there was a possibility that amidst the confusion, at first the murderer might have slipped the poison receptacle into his pocket. However, we found nothing on any of them that could have been used for such a purpose. We even searched the dead body and went through the contents of the odd, pretty little lizard-skin bag that she carried. Nothing but what you would expect to find: handkerchief, purse, lipstick, powder, etc. Nevertheless, from a slight change in Madame Story's expression afterwards, I judged that she now had at least a theory to work on. She resumed her questioning of Wynne Bucknell. What time was it when Hal brought the bottle of poison? I cannot tell you exactly, he answered coolly. It was after I got back from walking with— He lost his self-possession for a moment, and his eyes bolted. With her, he added very low. Hal was waiting in my room when I got back. Waiting in your room? Nothing out of the way in that, said Wynne. He often came to my room. Did you have any talk with him beyond what you have told me? No. It was impossible to tell from Wynne's wooden face whether or not he was lying. After he had given you the bottle, did he go right back to his room? He left me. I don't know where he went. Did he appear to be upset about anything? No. I happen to know from another source that he was very much upset, said Madame Story quietly. Wynne shrugged unconcernedly. I didn't notice anything, he said. My employer tried another line. Where was Layla's room in respect to yours? She asked. Immediately across the hall. Have you been into her room at any time today? No, answered Wynne stolidly. Did she come into your room at any time today? No. What did you do after Hal left you? Tidied up and went down to the lounge. Was anybody there? Yes, General Southam and Mr. O'Malley. Mr. O'Malley gave us a drink. His room is on the ground floor. Then who came? After we had returned to the lounge, Hal came in. Then a moment or two later, Elsie. Then you and Miss Brickley. Quite, said Madame Story. And Layla was the last to join the party. She studied Wynne through slightly narrowed lids. If you and Hal were on confidential terms, she said, you must know what was upsetting the boy. Will you tell me? Wynne met her glance with eyes as stubborn and blank as agate. I know nothing about it, he said. Madame Story shrugged and turned towards Hal. Instantly the boy began to tremble. However, the question that he dreaded was not immediately forthcoming. It was a 4-ounce bottle, as I remember, Madame Story said in an ordinary voice. No, 3-ounce, he answered low. With a rubber cork? Yes. The cork had a little glass rod which stuck down into the bottle. Quite. The label was turned towards the wall, and I couldn't read it what was on it. The word poison in red letters and the name of the acid. How long have you had it? I got it before Christmas, when I came home for the holidays. Had much of it been used? Oh, no, you couldn't tell that any had been used. The merest touch of the glass rod on the head of an insect was sufficient to kill it. Madame Story's voice became gentle as she asked the next question. Hal, if you'd had the bottle for 4 months, why did you suddenly make up your mind this morning that it was too dangerous to be left lying around? A frantic terror appeared in the boy's eyes. He struggled to overcome it. No particular reason, he stammered. I was just afraid that the servants might be curious about it. You know, if anybody sniffed at the bottle, it would kill them.
I know it, said Madame Story, but why didn't you hide it yourself, lock it up somewhere?
I don't know, faltered the boy. I just thought it would be safer with Wynne.
Ah, safer, said Madame Story.
General Southam had been listening to this with growing mystification and horror. He could stand no more. Rosico, what are you getting at? He demanded angrily. Are you trying to prove that my boy did it? Are you working for or against me?
Neither, she said. We didn't foresee this. I am working for justice.
Ah, you're playing to the gallery, he cried angrily, flinging away from the table. No woman could resist it.
Her eyes followed him, full of compassion. I'm sorry, she said gently, but she turned her back to the boy without relenting.
Hal, she said gravely, I put it to you that the reason you had to get the bottle out of your room was because somebody had tried to get it there.
No! No, no, cried the boy desperately. You're quite mistaken.
I put it to you, Madame Story went on sternly, that you came into your room this morning and found somebody with the bottle, and you only recovered it after a struggle.
No, no, he cried hysterically, pounding on the table. It is not true.
It was your sister, said Madame Story.
Oh, my God! Cried General Southam from the far side of the room. He clapped his hands to his head. The boy dropped his head to the table, weeping uncontrollably.
No, 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 he sobbed. All the rest of us looked at Elsie. I cannot say that her expression changed at all.
Well, she must have seen it coming for some time back. Her head was up. Her white face betrayed no confusion. She had gone beyond that. She looked proud and indifferent, like one who has passed beyond all human feeling. And it was tragic to see in one so young.
You'd better tell the truth, Hal, she said quietly. Everything has got to come out now.
No, no, he sobbed.
If you won't, I must, said Elsie. She looked at Madame Story. It is true that I tried to get the bottle of poison out of Hal's room this morning. He came in and took it away from me.
Leavitt O'Malley's face lighted up with a savage triumph.
She did it, he cried. Layla won the man she wanted, and she poisoned my girl. I knew it.
No, cried the boy, raising his streaming face. Elsie is incapable of such a thing. She couldn't even bear to see the insects killed with it.
I dare say, said O'Malley with a harsh laugh. You never know what these smooth young faces may hide.
General Southam came forward, scarcely able to speak.
Oh, Elsie, this is awful, awful, he groaned, letting his hand fall on her shoulder. She put her hand over his.
Hush, Dad, she said evenly. It is not what you think.
She looked at Madame Story. Since you've found out so much, she said, I must tell you the rest. It was not for Layla that I wanted the poison. Such a thought never entered my head.
What did you want it for? Asked Madame Story.
For myself, said Elsie with her look of almost scornful indifference. I'd had enough of the rotten show.
O'Malley laughed mockingly.
A likely story, he said. If you wanted it for yourself, why didn't you swallow it when you had the bottle in your hand?
I didn't want to be found there in Hal's room, said Elsie. I wanted everybody to think that it was an accident. Hal had told me about this poison when he first got it, and I knew what it would do. I had it all planned out. I was going to get a horse, ride down to the bridge over the head of the inlet. I intended to pour some of the stuff into my hand and throw the bottle and the stopper into the water. Then I meant to snuff it up. I knew I would fall instantly and that it would frighten the horse and he would drag me, and everyone would think it was an accident.
Hal would have known, said Madame Story softly.
Yes, I suppose Hal would have guessed, the girl answered with a catch in her breath, but he wouldn't have told. I didn't mind Hal's knowing, because we have always shared everything.
There was a silence in the room. Except for the boy's sobbing, General Southam had already taken so much. He could only hang his head and pat his daughter's shoulder helplessly.
When Bucknell jerked his head up and looked across the table at Elsie with the most awful expression of pain that I have ever seen in a man's eyes. Only the strong can suffer like that. She's lying, said O'Malley brutally. The bright flags of anger were run up in Madame Story's cheeks. Hold your tongue, she said. These people have enough to bear without your insults.
Fine talk, said O'Malley violently. What are we gathered here for, anyway, to applaud a piece of emotional acting? Or to investigate a murder? What have this girl's suicidal impulses got to do with the poisoning of my daughter? It's clear to me what happened.
Madame Story controlled her anger.
Then tell us, she said quietly.
Well, suppose this girl's first impulse was towards suicide, he thundered in his overbearing courtroom manner. So far as I'm willing to concede that, her story may be true, but I assert that it was followed by the impulse to murder. Somebody poisoned my girl. Nobody could have done it but her.
The accusing forefinger shot out. Anger inspired the stricken General Southam with new strength.
By God, he said furiously, if you don't choose your words, O'Malley, there will be another killing here.
O'Malley continued more quietly. She must have known that Hal had brought the poison to Wynne's room. Her own room is close by. When Wynne came downstairs, she went in and got it. We know that the door was not locked and that the bottle was lying in an unlocked drawer.
Elsie, asked Madame Story, did you know that Hal had brought the poison to Wynne's room?
I heard him come, the girl admitted proudly, and I suspected that that was what he had come for.
What did you do after Wynne had gone down to the lounge?
I also went downstairs.
But about 5 minutes later, O'Malley put in, plenty of time, plenty of time.
Did you go into Wynne's room?
I did not, said the girl coolly. I had given up the idea of using the poison. I had promised Hal that I would face the thing through.
Excellent, cried O'Malley with his fleering laugh. But let me point out to all of you here that when we all went out on the porch after lunch, Elsie, on some excuse or another, was the first to return to this room, and she was in here alone for a minute and a half, 2 minutes perhaps. It was then that she did the trick.
In that case, said Madame Story, the little cake must have been on Layla's plate before we went out on the porch. Do you know that it was?
Certainly it was, he cried aggressively.
Will you swear that it was? Asked Madame Story quietly.
Oh, it must have been.
Ah, then you cannot swear to it. Madame Story questioned each one of us in turn, but nobody remembered having seen Layla help herself to the second cake. Nobody could say whether or not it lay on her plate before we went out onto the porch.
Elsie's room must be searched, said O'Malley truculently.
Certainly, said Madame Story calmly. I will do it myself. A suspicious sneer fixed itself in his face. Come with me, if you wish, she added dryly. They left the room together, Madame Story warning me with a glance
to keep the others under observation while she was gone. It was not necessary for me to do anything. There we sat, the five of us, neither moving nor speaking. Stretched on four chairs by the wall lay the graceful figure of Layla Dean in her trim tweed suit, her daintily shod feet sticking up, a handkerchief over her face. Nobody could look at her, and nobody could forget her. The consciousness of death in the room could be read in the stiff pose of every living head. Elsie, who had the most at stake, appeared to be the least concerned. She had the look of one who had withdrawn deep into herself. The pale, cold mask of her face expressed no human feeling, except perhaps a faint scorn for the whole business. Her father had drawn up a chair behind, and resting his arms on the back of Elsie's chair, had dropped his head upon them. Hal's tears had dried up. He sat listening with a painful intentness for the sound of returning footsteps. Across the table sat Wynne with his chin on his breast. His face was invisible to me. When they came back, I gathered the worst from O'Malley's cruel, triumphant smile. Madame Story's face was grave and inscrutable. She carried a little book in one hand and something hidden in the other. Advancing to the table, she placed the bottle of poison on it. We caught our breath sharply. The bottle was now sealed with an ordinary cork. The little glass rod was broken off inside it. She said, "We found this in a small drawer of the desk in Elsie's room. The drawer was locked and we had to force it." "I never locked any of the drawers," said Elsie tonelessly. "Well, it was locked," said Madame Story mildly. "Wynne jammed in the rubber cork so hard that the person who opened it had to dig it out with the point of a nail file."
"Elsie's nail file," put in O'Malley.
"The cork broke, you see," Madame Story continued, "and part of it is still in the bottle. We found the remaining bits of rubber in Elsie's wastebasket. The bottle was afterwards stoppered with a cork taken from a Listerine bottle in Elsie's bathroom." There was a silence.
"Is that sufficient evidence?"
demanded O'Malley, looking from one to another of us with a sneer.
"Oh, Elsie," cried Hal in a heartbreaking voice.
"If I was clever enough to do that," said Elsie with a half-smile of contempt, "surely I wouldn't be fool enough to leave that evidence to convict me."
"They always make some fatal mistake," said O'Malley.
Elsie ignored him. "What do you think, Rosika?" she asked. "I have no opinion yet," she answered impassively. She turned to O'Malley. "If it was Elsie," she asked, "how did she convey the poison to this room?" There was another strained silence. O'Malley's hard, keen eyes were fixed on the girl, as if he would drag the secret from her by sheer force of his will. Elsie looked straight ahead of her, faintly scornful.
"Ha! I've got it!" he cried, and the forefinger shot out. "That old-fashioned brooch at her breast! Those brooches often have a secret receptacle to hold a lock of hair or the portrait of the donor."
He put out his hand towards the brooch, and the girl shivered. Madame Story intervened between them. With a murmured apology, she took the brooch out of the girl's dress, examined it attentively, found the hidden spring, and opened the back. We all saw the shallow cup that might have held a drop or two of poison.
"Is that evidence enough for you?" shouted O'Malley.
Madame Story smelled of the brooch. "No trace of prussic acid now," she said. O'Malley put his head down to it.
"You're right," he said, "but that's no evidence in her favor. The stuff evaporates quickly."
"Oh, quite," said Madame Story.
"There's my case," cried O'Malley dramatically. "Send for the police."
A very painful scene followed. The distress of the girl's father and brother was terribly affecting. Wynne probably suffered more than either of them, but he did not move. The girl herself seemed to be turned to stone. Madame Story stood at the foot of the table in what appeared to be an attitude of irresolution. In reality, she was thinking hard. O'Malley cried out impatiently, "Are you going to send for the police?"
"Just a moment," she said with her deceitful mild smile. "I was greatly lifted up, for I saw hope in that smile.
I don't think we've quite gotten to the bottom of this," she said.
"What do you mean?" he demanded.
"I want you to look at the pinholes in the front of Elsie's dress," said Madame Story.
O'Malley bent his head to do so while the girl stiffened with repulsion.
"I take it," Madame Story went on, "that this is the first time this dress has been worn since being done up?" Elsie nodded. "It just came from the cleaners," she said. "Notice how clearly the pinholes show up in the thin, crisp material," Madame Story said to O'Malley.
"Oh, what of it?" he growled.
"You do not contend, I suppose, that Elsie could have opened the brooch and poured the poison on the cake without removing it from her dress?" He made no answer.
"There are only two pinholes," said Madame Story softly. "Consequently, your case falls to the ground."
I felt like cheering.
O'Malley flushed darkly. "But Layla lies there dead," he said with a violent gesture. "You can't get away from that."
"Another theory to explain that has gradually been shaping in my mind," said Madame Story. From inside her belt, she took a little crumpled piece of paper with printing on it and smoothed it out. "It is a page torn from a book of poems, page 33 to be exact." She then opened the little book she had brought downstairs with her. "This book was lying on Elsie's dressing table," she said. "Page 33 is missing."
"Another link in the chain," cried O'Malley.
"I wouldn't call it that," said Madame Story in an almost gentle voice. "Notice these red smears on the torn page." O'Malley looked close and, touching the red marks with his finger,
"What is it?"
he demanded suspiciously. "Lipstick," said Madame Story. "Lipstick of a rather unusual shade." She opened Layla's lizard skin bag, which was lying on the table, and taking out her lipstick, opened the top and made another mark on the paper. It matched the existing marks exactly. "Layla's lipstick," said Madame Story.
"I don't follow you," said O'Malley, scowling.
Madame Story removed the stick of lipstick from the little gold tube in which it was held and put the tube to her nose. "You can still distinguish the odor of prussic acid," she said, "though it is faint. The poison was brought into the room in this." She offered it to O'Malley. He became pale as he smelled of it.
"Good God! Good God!" he stammered. He tried to carry off his confusion with a loud laugh.
"Are you trying to make out that Layla killed herself?"
"Not exactly," said Madame Story softly. "I should call it an act of providence."
"How could Layla have got hold of the poison?" cried O'Malley.
"Oh, very easily." Madame Story turned to Wynne, whose face was raised now, wild with hope and anxiety. "Where did you and Layla part when you returned from your walk?" she asked him.
"At the doors of our rooms," he said hoarsely. "Was the door of your room open?"
"Yes."
"Then Layla could see Hal waiting for you?"
"Yes, she saw him."
"Did you shut your door when you went in?"
"No."
"Then she could have overheard what took place between you and Hal?"
"She could have heard, yes."
"What exactly did take place between you?"
"Hal handed me the bottle of poison," said Wynne, "and asked me to keep it for him. He said he was afraid to have it lying around his room, so I took it and dropped it in my drawer, that's all."
"Didn't it strike you that this was an odd request?" I didn't think anything about it. I had something else on my mind at the time.
And then Hal came downstairs, said Madam Story, shortly afterwards Wynne followed him, and a minute or two later Elsie went downstairs. I suggest that when Layla was left alone upstairs, she went into Wynne's room and got the poison. She carried it into Elsie's room, where she opened it and filled the little gold tube.
You have no proof of this,
cried O'Malley furiously. There is the leaf torn from Elsie's book, with the marks of Layla's lipstick on it, said Madam Story relentlessly. Layla used the paper to keep the lipstick from staining her bag. After she had emptied the poison out of the little tube, she put the lipstick back in its place.
Layla had no reason to kill herself, cried O'Malley. That's preposterous.
I have no notion that she killed herself, said Madam Story quietly. The poison was intended for another purpose. She paused. Everybody in the room waited for her next words in agonized suspense. You will remember that when we went out on the porch, Layla remained in the room for a moment or two. Our backs were turned. It was then that she leaned across the table and poured the poison on the cake which was on Elsie's plate. When she came out on the porch, she was still adjusting the lipstick in its case. A breathless murmur of horror went around the table.
It's a lie,
cried O'Malley in a high, strained voice. Elsie, said Madam Story, tell me exactly what happened when you came back into the room. A spot of color had come into each of the girls' cheeks. I saw the cover of the percolator beginning to rise, she said breathlessly, and I ran back and turned off the current. And while I was waiting for the coffee to strain through, I picked up the cake on my plate. I wasn't thinking about what I was doing. It had a white center, and I don't like those so well as the black ones, so I put it back in the basket and searched until I found one that was black on the bottom. But I didn't eat that either. I don't know why. It's still on my plate. And a moment later, put in Madam Story, Layla came back into the room and helped herself to the cake that Elsie had returned to the basket. That was what I meant by an act of providence. We looked at each other in awe and horror. Oh, God, somebody whispered shakily.
Why didn't you tell us this before? Cried O'Malley.
Why? Said Elsie simply. It never occurred to me that that had anything to do with what had happened.
It's a lie, cried O'Malley desperately. Layla had no reason to harm Elsie. Layla had beaten her out. Layla had won the man they both wanted.
But had she? Madam Story put in succinctly. She turned to Wynne. Please tell Mr. O'Malley the circumstances of your offer to Layla. Wynne jumped up as if he was electrified. Oh, God, not that, he cried. What do you know about it? He demanded.
Part of what you said was overheard, said Madam Story.
Oh, I forgot, he said with a gesture. Miss Brickley.
After a moment of painful hesitation, he went on stiffly. I will only say this. As a result of something that Layla told me, I agreed to marry her, but I stipulated that I would never live with her.
So you see, said Madam Story quietly to O'Malley, Layla had not won him. After a moment, she added, Do you think it necessary to send for the police?
He threw up his hands and let them fall limply. He walked away from the table, a broken man. He stood by the chairs against the wall, looking down at the body. God knows what his thoughts must have been. None of us liked the man, but we respected his grief. Not a word was spoken until he had left the room. I need not go into the scene that followed. The three Southams became almost hysterical. Somehow or other, Wynne and Elsie came together, but they could not speak, only look their feelings.
They could not bear to have others watching them at such a moment, and they instinctively turned away through the French window, across the porch and down the steps. General Southam and Hal went in another direction. When we were left alone, Madame Story took a fresh cigarette and inhaled it gracefully. I was still a little dazed by what had happened, and I suppose it showed in my face, for she said smilingly, "What's troubling you, Bella?" "You must have suspected the truth as soon as you found the lipstick holder," I said. "Then why did you try to make out that you thought Elsie was guilty?" She looked out through the French window. We could see the lovers walking away, pressed close together, heads down, talking earnestly. "Well, it worked, didn't it?" said Madame Story. Join me next season for more curiously confounding cases and cunning criminals on The Locked Room. In the meantime, beware. Beware of footsteps in the dark.